Accession number 6106, reel 2.
Mrs. Anderson, reel 2. What were your first impressions of
Well,
Ash
when
camp?
We first went into the camp, we were all herded into one large room. It was terribly cold, and there we stayed. I don't know what they were waiting for. Perhaps just awkwardness. But we were there for hours. And, we got colder and colder, and I suppose more worried. However, eventually, we were allowed to go out. Our names were all taken. That was one thing they did do. Our numbers and everything else. And we were given... when we got out, we were allowed to look for our own huts. I was a long time finding it. It was called Z Hut. And when I did find it, I was very relieved to see our beds and our bags, luggage, all in it. That had been done the day before by the British residents.
What sort of place was Ash Camp?
Ash Camp was an old army camp. At one time, the British Army was there. In the centre of it was what had originally been a good, large house. And in front of it was a lawn. And the lawn was big enough for a football pitch, and it was kept. It was kept as an open space. Round it were rows of huts. And all very, very dreary.
I get the picture. And by the time you got there, was the camp pretty full of people?
We all came together.
I see.
No, we all came together. There was nobody in the camp when we got there. Except the men who had been organising the names. And then you found which was your little hut. You were allowed a certain amount of space for each person. And it was the space of a single bed, a small single bed, and as enough room to put a chair at the side. I can't tell you the dimensions. The three of us were lucky because... ours was a corner one, a corner hut. It had room for four people. And throughout the internment, we had that space for three. And so we were reasonably fortunate. Anyway, Ash Camp was a good place to be in because it had running water, there were toilets, and there were taps. There was... not a tap to every hut, you may well imagine, but there was a tap to your particular group of huts. And our Z hut was at an angle. We were at this corner. There were people there and there and there and there. And on the other side of the hut, there were people there and a corner one and along the back. So altogether they were... 1, 2, 3, 4. 8 families, I should think.
Yes. What was the what were the huts constructed of?
Oh, lath and plaster, you know. And in the plaster there were bugs, which was one of the unpleasant things. Didn't find that out till the summertime.
What sort of problems did that create for you?
Oh, terrible. Because we took in with us our mosquito nets. Now, the mosquito nets that we had had a round bamboo at the top and the net hung from the bamboo and you tucked it in. Well, the bugs got into the bamboo top of the thing and as soon as you got into bed, they came down and chewed. But at first we didn't have them. It was winter and I think they sleep in the winter bugs. They don't come out till it's warmer.
You were telling me you had rats as well.
Oh, rats were terrible.
How did they, where did you find them?
You know, the hut was only separated from its neighbour about 2 feet, I suppose, from the roof. And above that were the rafters. They ran along the rafters and chattered.
Did they ever get into the cubicles?
Oh, indeed they did, yes. One night, one of the rules of the camp was, and a very wise one too, that you kept a bucket of water. You filled the bucket with water and had it in your hut, your particular bit of the hut, in case of fire. One night, a rat fell into our bucket of water and woke us all up swimming round in the water. This daughter, the youngest one, was very brave. She took the bucket and she carried it out. And then a man from one of the other huts came with a stick and hit it on the head.
Mm. Did you manage to do anything to combat the rat population?
Oh, yes. We had cats. One child, a friend of Christine's, brought a kitten into camp with her. And she was the mother of vast hordes. We had one. And our cat became a character in the camp because she was bitten on her head and became very ill. Well, we were given some medicine for her, and it cured her, but she was never properly cured. She was mental after it, and but she caught rats.
Uh-huh.
Underneath the bed, you'd hear her chewing a rat. Yes, everything was eaten except the tail.
Why did she become a character? Was her behaviour strange?
Oh, yes, very strange.
In what way?
Well, she never did it in our hut, but she went to the other huts and got onto the beds and made mess on the beds. That's what. Then everybody loathed her, except us. We called her Sally because she was an alley cat.
Tell me about your fellow internees. What numbers and types of people were they?
Well, there were about, I think, 500. And as I told you, many of them, the vast majority, had been employees of the municipal council. And so there were a vast number of teachers, which was good as far as the girls were concerned. They had plenty of staff. And naturally, we had some Russians in camp, but they were technically British, you know. They were British citizens, or they wouldn't have been there. No Russian was in camp unless they had a passport.
A British passport?
British passport, yes.
So these were the wives of British people, were they?
I think some of them must have had British nationality. They must. I mean, two men I'm thinking of certainly must have had British nationality because they wouldn't have got in if they hadn't.
Yes.
One friend of mine who was married to a Dane could only bring her daughter in by courtesy, because she was too young to be left out alone. Near us, there was a woman, a middle-aged woman, Russian, and she had sons and daughters. She had married a soldier. He was a good 20 years younger than she was, and she'd married him for no other reason than to get a passport. And so she was in. And with her was her daughter, who was about 15. But she had sons in Shanghai. They weren't there with her. She had also a married daughter with her, but the married daughter was British because she'd married a Briton. And her little boy was there. She was a widow. So
why was it more popular to be inside the camp than outside of it?
There was no way of getting money outside. And inside, at least you were fed. Quite badly, but you were fed.
Right. You told me there was also a Japanese woman in the
camp. She was the wife of a Briton. She was there with her 4 little girls. And she was quite a wonderful woman. She looked after these children. They were spick and span always.
But what an extraordinary situation.
Yes.
For a Japanese woman to be interned by the Japanese.
But she looked at herself as a British woman. There were many Eurasians, and they mostly had, they had British husbands. But of course a lot of the men had wives who were outside. And that was where the temptation to get out of the camp came. There was no temptation for me. I had no one to go and see.
Why did the men, why were the men's wives not interned?
They didn't have to be. They were either Chinese or Japanese, and they didn't take any Oriental in unless the Oriental wanted to go.
I see.
The Japanese didn't want to feed us.
Now, Ash Camp was a mixed camp. What was the ratio between men and women?
Well, at first, there were too many women, because all, I told you before about the men who were picked up.
Tell me again.
The very first to be taken were men, and no one knew how or why they were taken. There were over 100 of them. And all the wives and the children of those men were in camp, which is why we had such a big proportion of women. And, of course, a lot of the women, well, I was one of the teachers, and a number of other women teachers were in there. And now I'll tell you this, which is quite an amusing story. There was a... I don't know what we had to do in the camp, but we had to do all the work there was in the camp, and there was a lot of work to do. And they wanted some more men. And one of the women who was on the committee, she was a teacher, she said, oh, we'd like 50 bachelors. Just for a joke. And sure enough, they were sent. But they were terrible men. They picked out all the men they didn't want from this all-male camp. And there they came.
Well, what sort of men did they send?
Well, I don't know how I would describe them.
Try.
They were certainly not desirable men for a women and children camp.
Did their arrival create any practical problems?
No, I don't think so. No, I think not, really.
Yes. How were the men and the women segregated within Ash Camp?
Well, if they were man and wife, they were given camps, huts together. But there were whole groups of women and children. And they had a captain who was a man and a vice-captain who was a man. And one of the men who was a captain, a vice-captain, this... One of the little jokes was the accent was on the vice. But he was still the captain. He found his girlfriend and that was all right. And who could blame them? They wanted jobs done for them and they got them done.
So, yes. These men, why did you think them unsuitable or undesirable?
Well, when they came in, one of them shouted out, "Hi, girls! Keep away from us. We haven't seen a woman in 6 months," which my girls thought very funny. And I didn't think it's funny at all.
I can imagine.
No. But anyway, I don't think anything very bad happened.
Yes.
The girls I know are all right anyway.
What other men had been in the camp before these undesirables were moved in?
Well, we had the jailers and we had the prisoners. There was a British prison called Ward Road Jail, and the men who were in that, and there weren't very many, I should think, only three or four. One was in for killing his girlfriend, I think, but one was only in for typewriters.
Sorry, in for what?
Stealing typewriters. And another was a drug addict. I can't remember. But by and large, we liked the prisoners better than we liked the jailers. They
Why?
Were a horrid set of men.
In what way were they horrid?
Oh, nasty. One beat his wife. Loudly. You didn't do anything privately in camp. Mm. If the wife was beaten, everybody heard. At least those near heard and passed on the news. There was nothing except tittle-tattle to interest you.
So they're a pretty brutal crowd, were they?
I thought they were, a very nasty crowd.
And when they were imprisoned with their own prisoners, Were the prisoners treated like ordinary internees?
Yes, they were.
Interesting. Now, tell me in as much detail as you can remember about how the Japanese organised the running of the camp.
There were very few Japanese guards. There weren't more than about 10. There was the man that was called the commandant, and he had several officers under him, and they all had their being in the house, the main house, which was called White House. And the running of the camp was left to the men who were in charge, the British residents.
To the internees themselves.
The internees themselves. We did all the running of the camp.
But did the Japanese themselves lay down any rules and regulations?
Oh, indeed, yes.
What sort of things?
Well, the meals, I think, were left to the men to do just as they could with the rations that came in. The rations came in once a day in the afternoon. And the meat, I'm sure you've never seen it. It was in a block, bits of meat, squashed together. And the only thing they could do with it was stew it. And when we first went into camp, they provided us with 2 meals a day. But very soon the second meal was given up because there wasn't enough to provide for a second meal. And the first meal, the main meal, was at about 12 o'clock. And you went and collected your ration. And each person had a ration, and each ration was the same. And believe me, it had to be the same. One of the things I did as a chore was helping to dish out. You had to count the bits of meat, and you had to count the potatoes. And if you gave one a bigger bit than another, you know, there was a row. Well, it was really very important. Besides this cooked meal, we had hot at breakfast, and that was what's called congee. It's rice. If you stir rice, it becomes into a sort of a gruel. Very unpleasant. And that you were given a bowl of. And you could also have from the kitchen boiling water in the morning. And the boiling water was a great asset. You could make cocoa with it.
Right. What were the sources of food?
They came in once a day. Bread, rice, green tea, and meat and vegetable. Now, the vegetable was, some days there wasn't any meat, and then you had only vegetable. And what you'd brought in for yourself. But it all came in on the one truck. And being of a worrying nature, I thought, what would happen if it didn't come? But that never took place. Mm.
And were there any other sources of food at all, apart from these rations?
Oh, there was what you brought in. Yes, the Red Cross. We had one or two Red Cross presents that were given to the camp. Not parcels, separate parcels. But they were given to the camp. And they were little luxuries. Cigarettes came in. Peanut butter came in. What else came in? I think that's about all that came in. Oh, we had toilet paper in. We had soap in. It's not that soap is food, but it's very necessary.
This was in the Red Cross parcels.
They were in the Red Cross parcels. And every month there was an allowance for a parcel came in, and that was only if you'd left sufficient money for it to come in. The money that we had ran out after about 3 months. But people who belonged to big firms or had Chinese friends or something like that had parcels all the time. But that was all.
How did you arrange your parcels?
Well, I had a contact, and she was only a very young Russian girl, and all the money I was able to leave with her, she spent and sent in, but it used up very quickly, and she had no money to supply any more. I think I told you before that I found some American dollars
You did.
And they came in too. And at Christmas, we had a present of a fruitcake. Mm. That was another British friend.
When you asked your contact to acquire things on your behalf, what kind of things did you choose?
Food.
Yes, what kinds of food?
I'm sure I would have asked for bacon. It seemed to me that when I smelt bacon round the camp, it was one of the things I wanted the most. You know the smell it has frying? Mm. I haven't told you yet about how we cooked in the camp.
No, we'll come on to that. Mm. Right, and another source you've told me was from the comfort money. How often did you get your comfort money?
We got the comfort money once a month, and it was £2.
Paid in what currency?
Oh, must have been local currency. I'm sure it was local currency. I'm sure the £2, which was charged to the British, was changed into local currency. And with that we got eggs. Sometimes they were bad. And
how were you able to spend this money? Do you give it to your contact or what?
No. It was done in the camp.
There was a canteen?
There was no canteen. But there must have been... It must have been done... Would you like me to ask my daughter if she knows?
So, let's talk about the communal preparation of food. Now, how was that done?
Well, a number of men worked in the kitchen. And they had large Chinese... You know how Chinese cook their rice? In an enormous thing like that. And... the rice is put in and it has the fire underneath it. And the others were cooked, the stews were cooked in just the same thing. There was one flavoured with curry and one plain. Will you have curry or will you have stew? And the curry had a little taste. It covered up the nasty taste of the stew. So most people liked curry.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of illness in the camp. The food is the rice.
Yes. How many meals a day were there, and at what time did you have them?
There was only the breakfast, where they gave us boiling water and congee, and the midday meal. That was after the first 3 months. There was no more of any of those things.
So after the midday meal, that was your last official food?
Yes, you had to. You were given a loaf of bread.
Mm.
We always had more bread than we wanted.
Were there any special preparations for the children?
Yes, there were. Both our doctors that we went in with had young children. And there was children's meals. The rice had its husks taken off. Because the rice with the husks is really what caused all the dysentery in the camp. It's more than anyone could take. My elder daughter couldn't take it at all, and she was put on children's meals. And anyone who'd been ill got children's meals for a little. The children's meals was done by some of the women. And it wasn't such a big job, and they could take more trouble with it.
I see. Now, forgetting about the communal preparation of food...
Yes.
From the food you were able to purchase privately,
yes.
What were your personal cooking arrangements? Where and when did you cook, and what meals did you make for yourself?
We had in camp what was called a chatty, and everybody had one. It was a... they were made in the camp. I think it's an Indian word, chatty, a wind thing. A square tin... And inside were clinkers. Then there was a... there was formed the base. And on the top you had... The lining of the thing was clay. This thing was lined with clay. Not flat, but rounded. And in you put the clinkers, and you had to fan out of a hole at the bottom. It had a hole in the bottom... And you had to fan the thing to keep it alight. And on that you could fry. and everybody had them. I was lucky in that Joy had a boyfriend, that's my elder daughter, had a boyfriend who lighted the chatty for us every day. Very nice boy he was.
Mm-hmm. So this enabled you to supplement the camp food quite a bit.
And that's why we were warned to take our tins in.
Mm-hmm. You were telling me you had a an unusual way of making Melba toast.
Oh, yes. A loaf of bread, I could never eat. I think you asked me, was I hungry? And I could never eat bread without anything. But if you cut it very thin and put it out in the sun, and in Shanghai you get sun both in the winter and in the summer, and that was the way to put it out in the sun, very thin, and it dried into Melba toast, and it was quite palatable. You could eat that without anything.
What kind of things that were important to the diet were you missing?
Well, fat, I think. And for that, we had the peanut butter. And that must have been one of the things that we could buy. They gave us rations, occasionally, of soya beans. And in the camp, there were two or three of these old biblical things, you know, two big stones, and if you put beans on there and you turn the handle, soya bean milk comes out. But few people can eat it or drink it.
Mm. Would you regard the diet as being adequate for maintaining health?
No, I shouldn't really. I think if we hadn't had our own bits and pieces, it would have been terrible.
Mm. Did any health problems arise because of the food?
Only
or lack
dysentery.
Of it?
And that was largely because of the rice.
What were health conditions like in the camp generally?
Not bad at all.
Mm-hmm.
The cold was terrible. I don't know. In Shanghai, everybody would say, oh, you must go away for the summer. It's so devastatingly hot. Well, I never think of the summer in camp. I think of the winter in camp. And the winters were cruel. We went in March. And for about 3 weeks, it was terribly cold. I remember that my hands all puffed up. All we had was these chatties. Some of the huts had other things. Voska is the Russian name for them. Little pot-bellied stoves with a chimney up. But only some had those.
Mm. So there were no health problems of any great consequence?
I don't think so. One of the advantages of this place was that you could go out of the camp to hospital if necessary.
What kind of circumstances made it necessary?
Oh, very ill indeed. A friend of mine went. They thought she had a tumour on the brain. And she was in hospital for some time. When she got to England, she went on the hospital ship, which took, well, actually, my daughters went on it after the camp. But they really thought that that's what it was, a tumour on the brain. No, you had to be very ill. I think I told you before that you could go for an abortion there.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that. And how did these were pregnancies arising from the men who were interned with their wives?
Well, no, they were not arising from them. One man who was interned with his wife, had a baby. And he upset the camp, taking up two plates for two rations. If he'd given it to his wife for the baby, that would have been more to the point, but he ate it himself. I don't think...
Now, did the Japanese lay down many rules and regulations about how the camp should be run?
Very few. We had a roll call every morning and every evening. And there we had to stand and wait for them to come and take us off. But that really was about the only rule that they were responsible for. Except the light. We were lucky in that we had electric light. The light went out at 9 o'clock. And after that, you couldn't be out of your hut. If you were out of your hut after 9 o'clock, you were in for trouble if you were caught.
Were there no other do's and don'ts?
I don't think so.
And no laws, no rules about smoking or things like that?
No, we smoked. And furthermore, the Red Cross sent in cigarettes.
Yes. So the camp was by and large run by the internees
themselves.
It was,
yes.
Now, through what kind of mechanisms?
Committee.
Tell me about the committees.
Well, the men who brought us in were the British Residents Association, and they were the committee to start with. After a time, we had a meeting, and they elected another one. And the second one wasn't as good as the first, I think.
So the first committee appointed itself,
yes.
And the second committee was by election.
Yes, that's right. And I think the first committee was the better one.
Mm. Now, what was this committee responsible for? What did it do?
Well, if you had a complaint to make, you went to the committee. Various people wanted to change their huts, didn't like their next-door neighbour or something of that kind. They went to the committee. They didn't go to the Japanese. Everything, really, inside. And they were responsible for seeing that the place was kept clean and tidy.
Yes. Did you ever make a complaint?
No.
Were there ever any complaints that you remember as being handled well or handled particularly badly?
No.
No.
No, I don't.
Right.
I told you we were lucky in this...